In the 30th year, Ezekiel 1, 1, 4 to 5, 15 to 22. In the 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day of the month, as I was among the exiles by the river Chebar, the heavens were opened and I saw visions of God. As I looked, a stormy wind came out of the north, a great cloud with brightness around it, and fire flashing forth continually. In the middle of the fire, something like a gleaming amber. In the middle of it was something like four living creatures. This was their appearance. They were of human form. As I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the earth beside the living creatures, one for each of the four of them. As for the appearance of the wheels and their construction, their appearance was like the gleaming of beryl, and the four had the same form, their construction being something like a wheel within a wheel. When they moved in any of four directions without veering as they moved. The rims were tall and awesome, for the rims of all four were full of eyes all around. When the living creatures moved, the wheels moved beside them. And when the living creatures rose from the earth, the wheels rose. Whenever the spirits would go, wherever the spirit would go, they went. And the wheels rose along with them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When they moved, the others moved. When they stopped, the others stopped. And when they rose from the earth, the wheels rose along with them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels.
Joseph Campbell, The Power of Myth, Masks of Eternity, pages 216 to 217.
Jung speaks of the circle as a mandala.
Mandala is the Sanskrit word for circle, but a circle that is coordinated or symbolically designed so that it has the meaning of a cosmic order. When composing mandalas, you are trying to coordinate your personal circle with the universal circle. In a very elaborate Buddhist mandala, for example, you have the deity in the center as the power source, the illumination source. The peripheral images would be manifestations or aspects of the deity's radiance. In working out a mandala for yourself, you draw a circle and then think of the different impulse systems and value systems in your life. Then you compose them and try to find out where your center is. Making a mandala is a discipline for pulling all those scattered aspects of your life together, for finding a center and ordering yourself to it. You try to coordinate your circle with the universal circle.
To be at the center?
At the center, yes. For instance, among the Navajo Indians, healing ceremonies are conducted through sand paintings, which are mostly mandalas on the ground. The person who is to be treated moves into the mandala as a way of moving into a mythological context that he or she will be identifying with, identifying oneself with the symbolized power. This idea of sand painting with the mandalas and their use for meditation purposes appears also in Tibet. Tibetan monks practice sand painting, drawing cosmic images to represent the forces of the spiritual powers that operate in our lives.
There is some effort, apparently, to try to center one's life with the center of the universe.
By way of mythological imagery, yes. The image helps you to identify with the symbolized force.
Just so you know, if one of you should come and visit me and sit in my office, and start talking like Ezekiel, the first thing I would suggest is to visit your doctor. And then we would have a discussion about what you had to talk about. Ezekiel, as well as many of the other writers of the Hebrew Scriptures, draw from the imagery of ancient Persia, particularly the Zoroastrian mythology. Judaism, when it in its captivity in Babylon in the 6th century before the Common Era, encountered that mythology, and it was a core part of the Persian myth, and continues to exist today as a modern theology, especially in parts of Iran. And Ezekiel drew from those images to try to communicate something important to his people. Remember, these are the leaders, the spiritual leaders, the doctors, the lawyers, the shamans of ancient Israel, who have all been taken up to Babylon from Israel. It was a pretty impressive way of conquering your enemy. The Babylonians would take the leadership out and take them to their place and leave all the common people there to fend for themselves, knowing that there would be a vacuum, a void in leadership. And so these people were there in Babylon, so far away from home, wondering if they would ever go back again. And Ezekiel had a grand vision that essentially reminded them that even though they were in a foreign land, their God that they loved and knew loved them from their home was with them. Powerful image. At that time in history, in our sort of anthropological history, gods were localized. And so you sort of adopted the god of your new area. That's what you did. It's sort of like adopting the culture of your new home. But Israel took it one step further. They believed that their God was the God over all the gods and all the other mythologies. And so they took God with them. And Ezekiel wanted them to be reminded that they were not alone. The wheel, the image of the wheel is so powerful because it is something, as Campbell says, imprinted deeply within us. Even before we invented the wheel as a humans, and that wasn't, it was also in Persia about 3,500 years ago. Now, in the history of humanity, that's not very long ago. And when people got to when the white people especially got to the Americas, they found that in the whole Western Hemisphere, wheels were not being used at all. And so most sleds were pulled. They would lay on the ground and pulled by dogs across the Great Plains. And it was only as the horses were introduced that changed everything in terms of travel. But in the Eastern Hemispheres, throughout Europe, throughout Asia, and on down into Africa, the wheel began to be the primary form of travel. But it's probably not through traveling that the wheel was initially invented. Most anthropologists believe that it was to make mass production of pottery that the wheel was actually invented. Isn't that interesting? But what's so interesting to me is that even though the wheel itself wasn't invented till 3,500 years ago, the imprint is there from way back. The earliest cave drawings show spirals. Whether they were talking about the sun or the stars, these images appear over and over again. We see not only from Ezekiel, but other ancient texts, that there are stories about wheels from outside and wheels from within. And so the wheel, in some ways, carries a powerful symbol. I want you to imagine for just a moment how this room would feel right now if we put all the chairs in a square. How would that change the feeling of this room? I'm opening it up. I'm just curious. What are your thoughts about that? How would that feel different and why? Hemmed in? Maybe not in a good way. Not the way we were talking about a minute ago. What else?
Divided into groups.
Divided into groups. It wouldn't flow?
Like the churches we grew up in?
Yes.
The people in the corners would be marginalized.
Interesting. Yes. Ah, good to have that engineering perspective.
I hate to argue with Joseph Campbell, but Argo, he said you never create your own mandala. You may pick one that it resonates with you, but if you try and create your own and coordinate it, that is more separating than you
can. Ah, interesting, interesting.
Does that stand with yogi?
His yogi. Aren't we? We're Trinity. We've got yogis, right? Yeah. Engineers have yogis at Trinity. That's right.
If you were in squares, you could join hands for Austin's blessing.
Yes. It'd be very difficult to do that. The wheel, the circle, provides a way of connection. And it's important. What Campbell wants us to remember is that the wheel is a metaphor, it's a symbol, but it's something that resonates deep within. That we see in all mythologies across the world, that the seasons are talked about as a circle or a wheel. That our lives are talked about as a circle or wheel. And in those cultures that believe in reincarnation, it's even more so seen as a wheel, where we move from life to life. And so, from every cultural perspective, we see that the wheel has been an important metaphor for those cultures. Here at Trinity, when we call the directions, like Ezekiel, that mentioned the four winds, the four directions, the four beasts, there is a core part of our own mythology that talks about east and south and west and north, and then an important piece, the center. I've had people say, so are you talking about five different deities? No, we're not. We're talking about one spirit that encompasses all, but those different directions provide different ways of talking about that spirit's presence. And so, really, it's not about the directions, it's about the center, and it's about how that all those eventually point to that which is within and without that we name to be God in our midst. That's what Ezekiel was doing. Ezekiel was identifying the wheels as some sort of divination. Each of them represented God's presence. They had eyes that looked out and a radiance, a divinity that permeated everything. And by talking about it in the four directions, Ezekiel was saying that God is everywhere. Not that God is confined to those four directions. Are you with me? It was Ezekiel's way of doing like what we try to do in our calling of directions, to say that it's not about each of these things so much, but it's about all of these and God encompassing everything. One of the interesting things that Mary and I just did was a quick trip to
Salt Lake City and back. And one of my dreams has always been to visit Mesa Verde National Park. I've never been there before. And to see how the ancient Pueblos were thinking in the same kind of images as the people in China and Europe and Africa in terms of these wheels and circles was very powerful. In fact, in the center of their home, they would often create a hole. Do you all know about this? And that hole only went down a few feet. It didn't go to another place, but it symbolically represented the movement into the underworld where the Great Spirit moves out of. So there was a sense in their culture that the Great Spirit was above them, but also the ground which held them together. And you see these circles in these ancient homes, and you realize that there's so little that separate us, that we're all powerfully connected to each other through symbol. The powerful thing to me in thinking about all this is how easy it is for us to become scattered in our anxieties, in our struggles with health, in our need for connection with each other, careers, retirements, whatever. All these things create noise that distract us. And one of the things about the image of the center and the metaphor is this reminder that we can always move back to the center core. In mystical Judaism, there's this idea of the tree of life that comes out of the Kabbalah. And that tree of life has different emanations, different parts of them that represent different things. And we usually see them in a one-dimensional picture with a left side and a right side and with these branches that represent different things. But the ancient mystics, the Kabbalists, the writers, would remind the people that this is not one-dimensional. This is a tree that is spinning. And it is like Jacob's ladder, but unlike just moving upward, it is moving down and up on an axis. And even though one side may represent the feminine and one the masculine and one the transcendent and one the immanent and one the heavenly and one the earthly, they don't really, because they're spinning. They're all spinning constantly. And the axis is God. And we are there with God on that axis, the mystics of Judaism write. And so in every place we see this connection. And so that's what I feel is important to receive, at least today, from this, is that even though we can talk about wheels in the skies and all their glamour and power, and we can talk about the seasons of our life and the seasons of the earth, there is always a center to return. I know that many of you practice contemplative prayer in some way, meditation or quiet. And maybe you don't even name it that. Maybe you just make sure that every day there is a place of stillness, a place that sets you apart from all the noise. Why do you do that? I believe you do it for the reason I do it. It takes us back from all these things, all these worries, the hour of the wolf at 4 a.m. when you wake up and everything becomes apparent in your anxiety, right? That's why we move back to the center. And in that place, what we find is that God is there, has never been anywhere else, and we are there also. Jesus, in his ministry, would often spend much time with the crowds, but then would have to go off and be alone.
And we see that rhythm over and over again in the Gospels and his ministry. And he lets people know that this is an important part of who you are. And you can't always be out there doing stuff because it's so easy to get scattered, but to move back to the center. Campbell reminds us that the masks of eternity are our own distractions, our own inability to move back to the center. And whether it's through mandalas, whether it's through ritual in a circle, whether it's through centering prayer or meditation or a Sufi dance or however we find that place, we are called to do it and to go there over and over again. Not to discover something new, but to discover what's already there. Yourself and God. So the next time you're feeling that anxiety, that rush of thoughts, that place of scattered, remember that the ritual of the wheel is there for you, and the wheel internally that you can go. And it's not about the places on the edge, though they may be various aspects of who you are. It's what those point toward, and that is the center, which is God, which is love. Amen.